but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Oregon put up 59 points in the season-opening victory over Montana State. Offense was very good. A whole bunch of players got to play. Looked like it would be a lot of fun to call that game if you were an offensive coordinator, because you get to kind of do some things maybe without the stress of being in a tight game. But, you know, I've often talked with coaches who say, you know, sometimes those are the harder games to call because, you know, you're trying to get your guys in position to succeed or trying to set something up or maybe work on something during a game. But I'm really curious on Will Stein, the Oregon offensive coordinator's approach. He is joining us here in a moment, and I'm going to ask him about his approach to the game, play calling, what that rhythm is like, what it feels like when you only get, like, you know, a dozen of these or 14 of these in a season as a play caller. Yeah, you can do it in practice. You can do it in scrimmage. But it's different when you're in a game situation. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is a game situation. Will Stein, Oregon offensive coordinator, joining us fresh off the practice field. Hey, Will. How you doing, man?
Good, too.
Good. I'm really good. Kids are back in school, man. How are things in your household?
I got a almost 3-year-old who's learning how to get potty trained, and then I have a 1-year-old who is finding her voice. So yeah, things are about
to change. I think there's some biology there. It's they're just old enough now where you're forgetting how hard it was when they were a newborn. So otherwise, no one would have multiple kids. Like you would go, "That's the hardest thing I've ever done." So it's good.
No
age.
Doubt.
Good
yeah. Age. No, bless my wife. She's at home with them all the time, and I get to coach football, but yeah. Whenever I go home, I just try to be there, be present, do whatever she needs me to do.
I want to ask you about calling a game. There, you know, there's a rhythm and a flow to calling a game. How did it feel to be back in the box? Because, you know, I know you only get 12 or 15 of those times a year, but how did that feel to be calling plays?
I mean, it's awesome. There's nothing like it. You know, it's just a blessing that I'm able to do it and do it at a place like Oregon with great players and great coaches around me. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And when you prepare like we do as coaches, players, it makes the game simpler, but there's always things that comes up, you know, during a game that you got to adapt and change and fix. But all in all, it was great to get back out there.
Help us with that, because most people will never be in that position, but we all play strategy games. But how much of what you're doing up there as you're calling plays, like how far ahead in the game are you? Is it play to play, situation to situation? Or are you thinking, you know, are you thinking as each series as sort of its own subset? How do you sort of approach that?
It's really just a one play focus. It's what do I need to do on this play to give our guys the absolute best call possible for them to be the most successful that they can. So, you know, when you get to call plays, you have to break it down segments, normal downs, first and 10, second and 1-6. You have off schedule, second and 7+. You got third and 1, third and 2-3, third and 4-6, third and 7-10, third and 11+. You got red area. You got a fringe area. You have high red, mid red, low red. You got goal line, short yardage calls. So you have all these situations that you are preparing for all week long, hours on end, practicing, making sure that our guys know exactly the calls that are going to come in and the defenses that we're expecting, and then being able to coach them up on what if they don't give us this? What is the second look that they have? What is maybe the third look that they have? What is something that maybe they showed on tape 3 years ago that we know about that we have to just prepare them for? And 99% of the times, you don't even get those, but you have to play the percentages and you have to play, like you said, the strategy of the what ifs. And to me, there's 70 plays in a game on average. We averaged 68.5 last year. Let's say there's 10 plays where the defense has a better call than us. There's 10 plays where we have a better call than the defense. And then there's 50 plays that are cover three versus inside zone, or cover four versus four verts. So how do we as an offense get our quarterbacks, get our players during those 10 negative plays that are on to get them out of that play with either a check, a protection check, a run check, to get those more into that 50 category or the 10 that we have good. So that's where you can create some explosives. You can create some contingency plans to where, hey, like, we got a bad call on, they got a better call than we do. Like, let's get out of it. Like the Dante Moore third down and 14, when they had zero pressure from the field and we slid the protection and then threw an angle route. Like, that's a, they had a better call on than us originally. Then we got out of that. We checked the protection, checked the route, and hit an explosive. So that is the goal as a play caller, is to get your players to know exactly how to get out of bad plays.
You mentioned the 68 and a half. Chip Kelly, I think, talked about this last year, that, you know, he was a guy that liked to play fast. And then all of a sudden last season, they really slowed it down. And they said later, hey, we were trying to manage snap counts for guys. We thought it would be a long year with the playoff and all that. Have you guys adjusted at all, you know, how fast you want to play, tempo?
No, we stay the same, but the game has changed. I mean, when Chip was here, there was no substitution rules on offense. Mm-hmm. There was no clock stoppages. I mean, there was clock stoppages in between first downs. Like, you know, now the clock rolls more in football. If the ball goes out anywhere near the ticks on our sideline, the refs stand over the ball and allow substitutions from the defense. So the game is different. The rules are different. So what's going to happen? Like, there's going to be less plays. Yeah. So, I mean, you look at the average plays from us last year was 68.5. Ohio State was a little lower. Our league's a little bit slower by nature, because more teams huddle, more teams play more traditional pro style. But we're going to do what we do. You saw us on Saturday playing tempo. We play huddle. We huddle speed break. We do. My thing is, like, I want to dictate the pace of the game. I don't care if we got to go fast or slow. To me, when you go fast all the time, then what is the defense going to practice all week? You going fast all the time. Mm. What's tough is when you go fast, then you go slow, then you go fast, then you huddle, then you break fast, then you break slow. Like, creating that pace, to me, is more important than just going fast or going slow all the time.
Fascinating. You know, you'll see coaches or even parents will try to put our kids into some positions where we go, let's see how they react. Let's see how they do. You know, I'm watching my kid swim and I'm going, let's see how she reacts to getting in deep water here. But do you do that with a play call ever? Do you go, all right, I want to see my QB. I think I'm going to get this look. Can you afford in a game to go, let's see how Dante reacts to this. Let's see if he sees what I think he's going to see.
I do that in practice. I do that in spring ball, fall camp, winter walks, summer walks. That's when I put him in the most difficult situation that we can. And then when you get to the game, like I mentioned earlier, I mean, majority of the time, those situations don't even come up. Right. But you want to prepare them in the practice setting rather than a game. I'd rather not put him in that in a game.
Yeah.
But like I mentioned, you know, every play's got to play within itself. Like, you might have four verticals called, but what if they bring everybody? How do you get out of that? What are your checks and balances to create either a get back to the line of scrimmage, a positive gain, or explosive? Like, that's the whole goal, is limiting negative plays. So that's why the wide play call, a bad play call, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Into a positive. And positive doesn't just mean touchdowns. It means, like, hey, second and five is good, you know? Second and seven is good. Second and eight is better than second and 12.
Right.
So that's what I try to get our guys, their mindset. And doing that in practice, doing that, you know, earlier in camps and winter walks, that's when we get all those problems. So then when we get on the field, it's like clockwork. We can get into the better play.
You played a lot of guys. I think you had 10 or 12 rushers. You had 10 or 12 receivers. It's fun to see a lot of that depth out there on the field. Did you get enough in that week one game, enough of seeing your ones play to, you know, did you feel like you got enough of a look at them?
I did. You know, Dante came out, I think fourth quarter, he didn't play that. I think he played maybe till 3 minutes left in the third. You know, Austin got some quality reps. And I needed to get Austin, Luke, and Brock out there just to make sure that they have some game reps. I mean, last year we were battling our butts off just to finish the game in week one. So it was good for me to see other guys play. Our offensive line got a lot of quality work. You know, our last scrimmage really pushed our guys to play like a game to get, you know, 60 plus snaps. So I feel like I got enough guys out there and enough work from our first team and, you know, even second guys that were giving us quality depth and quality reps. So I feel good about it.
I have this recurring nightmare that, you know, either I'm on air and there's dead air, or I've written a column and it appears blank when people go to read it. As a coordinator, what's your nightmare situation or scenario? Do you lose the game plan on the way to the game, or you have to call a play and you don't have your stuff in front of you? What's the recurring nightmare that you might have?
I would say calling something off the cuff that you had a plan for and you just disregarded the plan.
Mm.
You know, that's something that I vowed after UW 23 on the road.
Yeah.
You know, we had a fourth down and two or three call, and I think it was fourth and two or three. And I didn't call it. I called a play that I liked, but it wasn't something that I had prepped for all week to call in that specific situation. So that's what keeps me up at night, is those calls and the gut calls a lot of times as a play caller. Like, there's some gut calls, but then there's just, hey, this is what we practice. This is what our guys know. This is what we liked on Wednesday night as a staff when we're all calm, cool, collected. Like, call the play, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And when you don't do that, sometimes it does work. You're like, 'cause, you know, oh man, that was a great call. It was out, you know, off the cuff. But like, majority of the time, those don't work. So that keeps me up at night a lot, you know.
Yeah, because you get
eight from the eight.
It's like
fourth and eight from the eight keeps me up, you know. Like, yeah. And goal plays, those kind of keep me up. First play of the game last week, you know, I was like, all right, what could happen if they do this, if they do that? That stuff keeps me up. And, you know, we didn't get what I thought, but there's a lot of things that keeps me up. But I know that preparation, practice, the amount of time that we put in as coaches and players is just, it's really kind of crazy how much time goes into this. And then you gotta call it like you planned, in the calm, cool collectness of a offensive staffer, the Bill Walsh way, you know. You try to do stuff on the field in the heat of the moment. That's when emotions are high. That's when thoughts are not clear as much. You have to remain poised and call what you practiced.
And I had a chance. I was covering the NFL in 2000. I was covering the Niners, and I got a chance to spend time with Walsh because he was there as a consultant. And I often, you know, he wasn't doing a lot during the day. He had an office, and I sat with him a few times and just talked. And he was just so smart about everything, like the organization of your time, structure of practice. He had thought things through. Is he an influence on you, or what coaches do you kind of look back and think about as I bring that up?
I think, you know, I've obviously was really young when he was still coaching. So, but his influence on the game as a whole, and like you said, his strategy, the way that he developed the team, drafted a team, called an offense, the rhythm of the plays, making everything look the same, yet, you know, running different plays off different looks, you know, the West Coast offense. Yeah. I played in this system in college under a guy named Sean Watson. It wasn't exact same verbiage. He kind of changed the verbiage, but the structure, the play calls were all the same. So that had a big influence on me. But yeah, I mean, I've had a great coach my whole life. I played at Trinity High School in Louisville, Kentucky under Bob Beatty. And he won, I think, 15 state titles at Trinity. And my offensive coordinator there, Andrew Coverdale, still a huge influence to me. I played for Steve Kragthorpe, the late great Steve Kragthorpe, who passed away 2 years ago, unfortunately. And he's the one that brought me on as a walk-on and started me as a walk-on at Louisville. And then Charlie Strong, I worked under Bobby Petrino, Tom Herman, Hank Carter at Lake Travis, Jeff Traylor at UTSA, now Dan. So I've been really fortunate to be around some phenomenal head coaches that are very structured, organized, disciplined, creative, and winners. And that's, to me, been huge for me in my development as a coach.
You grow up in Louisville. I've been to Churchill Downs for a derby. It's awesome. Great experience. I also went to the Waverly Hills Sanatorium because people told me it was haunted and they were giving tours at night. And it was, you know, it's where everybody had tuberculosis, I guess, you know. And you ever been to that place? You ever been there at night?
You know, I don't know if I ever went there. No, I'm good on tuberculosis or getting
seeing ghosts.
Out of my pants. Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm good. I'll go to Churchill Downs. I'll do the Bourbon Trail. I'll go play some great golf and see my family and friends all in Louisville, but the tuberculosis spot is, right. is not on my list.
It wasn't on mine either, but I got sucked into it. And then you're there at night and it's pitch black and they give you flashlights and they're like, you know, this is the room where, and I'm like, I got to get out of here. Like, this is not my thing either. Will Stein, Oregon offensive coordinator, is with us. All right. I asked you last time we talked about Sissy Cakes, your mom's business. I want to plug it again. What's going on with Sissy Cakes? What's the latest?
They're just balling out of control. I mean, they send cakes all over the damn world. So my mom is actually, she'll be in town tonight for the game this weekend. Oh, nice. And I will have an orange juice cake. I'm sure I'll have a chocolate chip cake. I'll have it all. It's, you can't get anything better. So
what was the start? What's the origin of that? Sissycakes.com. But what's the origin of that business?
So my mom's been baking cakes with my aunt for years, and she always did my birthday cake. She's a phenomenal baker. And then she was making the orange juice cake, which was famous in my family. My mom got the recipe when she was younger from my dad's side. And basically, COVID hit. My mom was a teacher. My aunt was a fitness instructor. And they kind of just at home. And, hey, people were wanting the cake still. And they just said, hey, why don't we just start a business? Because everybody would ask for the orange juice cake on, you know, special occasions.
Sure.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, and my mom would make, you know, probably 30 or 40 of them. And then it just became, hey, why don't we just make these? Because everybody loves them. And they've just been killing it ever since. And it's really cool.
I'm going to reach out. I'm going to get your mom on the show.
Great.
I'm going to get your mom on the show. We're going to do a whole thing on cakes and the origin of that. It's like one of these stories you see on Shark Tank. Like, you know, it's just.
I know. I told them to go on Shark Tank. I told them to do that. We got to get them on there. Like, come on.
Does she need it, though?
Cuban, one of these guys are.
Does she need it? It seems like it's sailing.
I mean, it is, but I mean, can't we get, I mean, let's explode. Let's get worldwide.
Never enough.
Let's get Kevin. Let's get all those guys buying in.
Never enough. Offensive coordinator mindset right there, Will Stein. All right. What do you see on film? You know, you look at Oklahoma State.
What I see, I mean, there's a lot of new guys, a lot of new faces. Todd Grantham was a defensive coordinator at Louisville in 14 when I was my last year coaching there, my second year coaching with Coach Petrino. I mean, I know he's aggressive. I know he's been coaching a long time. Phenomenal defensive coordinator, been in a lot of spots, been in the NFL, been in the Saban tree. So he's going to have them ready, and I'm expecting any and all types of looks for us. So it'll be a good challenge. You know, obviously Mike Gundy's won a ton, so that guy knows what he's doing. And, you know, when I was at Texas, we'd always play Oklahoma State, obviously. And it's just, I mean, they were always really tough. Played them in Stillwater, played them in Austin, and just a really good football team. You know, they obviously are an air raid offense, going to air the ball out, play fast, high tempo. So, you know, if they're going to play that fast, we might have more possessions on offense, which is good. But yeah, I mean, I got a ton of respect for them and what he's done, there over his career. And, you know, I have a bunch of hungry kids coming in here that want to beat the Ducks. So it's our job to you know, get off to a good start like we did last week and be able to run the football. And we got our opportunities to throw the ball down the field. We got to hit them.
I've never been to a game in Stillwater. What's that like?
Rowdy. Yeah, the fans are right on top of you. Stadium is probably slightly smaller than Autzen, but the sidelines are super tight. I mean, the fans are literally right behind your bench, and they have these paddles that they pound on the on the side of the stadium, you know, like on the wall. And good fans, passionate fans. Again, like long tradition of winning, especially in the Big 12. And, you know, Coach Gundy's done a great job there.
All right, Will Stein, I appreciate you. For anybody who wants a cake, sissycakes.com, and we'll catch up with you down the road. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, man.
All right, take care. There he goes, Will Stein, offensive coordinator and cake promoter on this show. His mom, we got to get his mom on the show. I went to the website as he was talking there and hungry for cake all of a sudden, but they do. They ship all over the world. And yes, when we had Will Stein on before, we talked about it. I want you to leave it here. There's so much more ahead, including a visit from Jimmy Rogers, Washington State coach. What is Jimmy Rogers thinking about as Washington State prepares for a game against San Diego State in Pullman on Saturday? It was a wild and weird start for the Jimmy Rogers era at Washington State. I had a first at johnconzano.com. I can, on the Monday mailbag, I had a Washington State fan asked me if Jimmy Rogers is going to make it more than one season, given the way they played against Idaho. Idaho dominated Washington State at the line of scrimmage. Washington State won the game. That's the point. You win the game. You play to win. But they only had 3 rushing yards, and Idaho owned the line of scrimmage. It was troubling. I made my picks today at johnconzano.com. I'll talk about that coming up. My week 2 can't miss 5-star predictions, plus Jimmy Rogers still ahead, and the 5 at 5. Leave it locked in.